Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me, and when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And I'm Ethan. Today we're talking about Dune.
I was watching a bunch of Rebecca Ferguson interviews this week because she's fucking incredible.
She's an insane person.
It's amazing. I love her. But she, in one of the interviews, she said that they're asked about the tattoos on her face in the movies, and she said it's that thing. It's the fear.
Cool.
It's all that the fear poem or whatever.
Yeah.
Mantra is what's tattooed on her face.
That's so cool.
It's really such a good touch because no one would know what it is.
Right.
Like, it's just, you know, it's just some symbols.
Yeah.
Or a language we don't know in the real world because it doesn't exist. So anyway,
that's awesome. I did not know that. That's super cool.
I think the more I thought about Dune's world building and what to pull out of it to really like highlight of what you could take anywhere, the more I just think this is a masterpiece of world building specifically.
Yeah.
And I it's incredible because everything is so.
It's why it's one of the most foundational pieces of speculative fiction in history.
True.
But I'm not saying this to be dramatic, like, no. I often do or indulge in hyperbole.
It's real.
It is.
Yeah. And I think, but what sets it apart is like the specificity and the uniqueness of its world building that you don't see people recreating in quite the same way. And and maybe it's because there have been a lot of copycats where it's like Tolkien technically, you know, like everyone just copied Tolkien, so it doesn't feel special, but it is fucking insane. But like maybe it's a lack of copycats. I don't know. But Dune, like there's so much in here that's easy to just get lost in.
I think it has everything to do with the fact that he started as a journalist. And as a journalist, you have to be very investigative and you have to really understand humans and the way they think and the way they move in society.
There's a bit of an ethnographic anthropology approach.
Because everything is unlike Tolkien, unlike even Star Wars, right? When you think about these other very expansive, very famous worlds, this feels more like a true future version of our human society than any other one, regardless of the fantastical elements and the worm juice that makes you connect with your dead ancestors and all that shit. Everything feels very human
and understandable. How the through line is one drawn, so we actually understand how things have gotten to this point.
Oh, that through line, yes,
and makes sense. Like you can wrap your head around it and go, yeah, that actually would make sense. Also, it's like.
Yeah, Paul can trace his lineage back to Agamemnon. That's part of the story.
I didn't know that, but yeah.
I think so. I think I remember.
But it's Paul also like, it's like that. Year like 100,000 or something. It's like so far into the future that it's like so much can happen. But, because it does a great job of showing that like humans evolved beyond like, you know, what we think is possible and then have to revert because it turns out.
Yeah,
we hit some snags, like the way they handle AI and the thinking machines and all that. And we'll get into that.
It is as much a study on humanity as I think a lot of cyberpunk fiction is, in the sense that reading it does give me this feeling almost like an uncanny valley.
Yeah.
Where like I had to stop playing cyberpunk because I'm like, nah, this is bumming me out. It feels too real.
Yeah.
And corporations, man.
There is a similar feeling of reading or I'm listening to Dune, but where I'm like, this is kind of bumming me out a little bit because it feels really plausible.
Yeah. All right. Let's put the glazing machine away for and let's get into the.
Yeah,
let's talk about
some
of these world building just because otherwise we'll just fucking wax poetic about how great Dune is for a while. I think, and I know that you have a list of the highlights from the world building you want to go before we get into the deeper dives on some of the world building components we want to draw and find something in.
The things that I love, the specific elements that I love about the Dune world, that list, megafauna in the form of the giant worms. I think giant creatures are just always fascinating. Weapons made of teeth. Self-explanatory. Super soldiers.
Which is the Kris knife, right?
The Kris knife, yeah. The super soldiers and black ops groups, strike forces in the Sadakar, I think they're always fantastic. Ecology as religion. Genetic breeding, I think, is a very touchy subject, but I think a fascinating one to play with in a future-oriented sci-fi world.
And it's
I'm not advocating for it.
No, and I think the story does a good job of being like, this is not a morally good thing.
This is not good. You should not be doing this.
This is manipulation, and they are like, and the Bene Gesserit are not respected as morally upstanding people.
Absolutely. A post-AI society,
I think that's fantastic.
Fucking
handled
great.
Really well in the Dune Prophecy TV show.
I couldn't get into it.
It's not the greatest.
I lost it. It lost me in the first 10 minutes when they introduced the voice as something, quote unquote, that I've been working on for a while. I'm like, nope, that's a way too big. I don't like that. No, we're done.
Yeah. It has some weak points, but it has some highlights. I think it handles the post-AI society quite well.
Futuristic feudal societies. I think that's where families replace kingdoms.
Great houses are,
I think that's super fun.
They're fucking fascinating.
Humans becoming superhumans as a result of living in extreme environments like a pressure cooker. I think that's fantastic to play with.
Spice.
Space missionaries and millennia long planning cycles. I think I'm separating those things. I think space missionaries as their own thing are fun. Yeah. The Bene Gesserit are space missionaries with millennia-long planning cycles, but the Sith also had millennia-long planning cycles, and I think that is like really deep-seated in the shadows planning that goes way longer than we think it will.
Yeah.
I think those are some of all of my favorite elements of Dune, as I was just thinking about it. They're like, all of these things are great, but there's so much more. The still suits themselves are great, right? You know, like armor that's powered by the body's movement. That alone is a very cool idea.
Yeah.
Right. I should have added that to the list because that is a really cool idea. But yeah, there's so much in there. What have you got? What's on your list?
I think we could just honestly get into the meat. Let's do that.
Yeah,
you want
to talk about water? You're thirsty.
I think there are two ideas I'm going to talk about. You know, because it's takeout, we could do whatever we want. I have two ideas. I want to extract ideas from. I think that people should really take a look at of what you could do in your world. One is the way that they handle water.
Yeah,
like the stillsuit's a great example of how like the Fremen's relationship to water is incredible, and I think I think it's the best part of world building of Dune.
Okay.
And I think that's because it is perfectly logical.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you would do if you lived in a desert.
Yeah.
And you had tech like that. I think it's also a fundamental part of that culture, and it's on display all the time. And it makes them so much more grounded and relatable. And it's the small things. It's the I spit
as a sign of respect.
As a sign of respect.
Which, right. Thank you for sharing your body's moisture with me.
Which we are like, that's the greatest insult.
Right.
Don't throw up your vomit. That's moisture leaving your body.
It's the, I forget her name now, but one of the handmaidens, when they first arrive on the planet, one of the handmaidens that is serving Lady Jessica, her title in the Fremen language, I forget what it is, but it means well dipper. And when Jessica realizes that that's what that means, or when Thufir tells her that's what it means, she suddenly realizes this person is a plant, because someone who works a well on a desert planet would be way too important to be a handmaiden.
Yeah.
For somebody, so she's immediately recognizing something's going on here.
Yeah, this is off. Yeah.
And I thought that, and there's also a phrase in the book that stuck to me. I think it's when they're introducing Liet Kynes, who's the
doctor.
The doctor, right. Liet Kynes, it shifts to Liet Kynes' perspective, and they're, in the book, it's Liet Kynes is a man, in the movie, she's a woman. They just changed the casting, but so I'm just going to say that. But when Liet Kynes is looking on someone, she notes how their face is water fat, is full of water.
Yeah, they're bloated.
They're bloated, but relatively speaking, they're bloated. And it was such a great everything is centered around water,
and to frame excess and gluttony as, you have more water than other people.
Yeah.
Your
body is storing excess water right now.
Yeah.
It's what we would think of as normal is in excess.
Yeah. And all of that, so good. The way they have the sacred pool.
Yeah.
So much water, but it is sacred. your final body's water. It's the final count at the end of your life. This is where, you know, and like, we're leaving that alone. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about how effective, it's also just kind of cold in my apartment. Just thinking about how evocative that is, yeah. That like you have this precious commodity that you are dying to get more of, and you have so much of it that you abstain from using for anything because like you respect your elders, your lineage, your people so much. This is how you live. Like the Fremen are such a tightly knit society, and to have like, so it just makes sense that they would be so respectful of their dead in this way.
Yeah.
Even though.
And that this is like, how they would venerate their dead. Yeah.
But like juxtaposed to like, oh, we killed a Harkonnen. We're going to take their water. Oh, and it's got too many chemicals. So we'll just use it to.
I don't know if that's actually in the book. I haven't gotten that far in it, but
maybe not. I don't know.
But if not, great add-on by Villeneuve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's such a good juxtaposition to the way that they treat their own dead, to be like, oh, we would never touch our dead's water because it's sacred, versus we don't really want to use this water for much because it's like poisonous water, but yeah. We'll like find a use for it in like the dredges of our like inner working cogs of society.
Sure.
Like, yeah, our cooling systems, it's fine.
Sure.
You know, like that shit, that's so good. So, but anyway, so I, that whole thing, brilliant. And I think, one, if you have a desert society in your world, like especially like when you do like these you know, like big sprawling like D&D type worlds where you put different biomes, it's just like it's an MMO map where you're like, there's a desert next to a mountainous snow area, like having right. that kind of thing. But anyway, having that desert society have this relationship to water on some level, just it's an easy full copy. Now
you can change the details of it.
Yeah, yeah. You could, if it's just, you know, for you and your friends, just fucking use the whole thing.
Who gives a shit?
Thus is the purpose of this podcast. But
Control A, Control C, Control V.
Correct. but I was trying to think about what else you could have this like sacred relationship as a resource that we would think is abundant in our world, and like kind of playing on that edge. And a lot of this initiated was, I was thinking about, you know, that moment where Stilgar spits at Leto, what do you do that has similarly like, what the fuck, but actually it's great respect moment. Blood oaths are seen as like a negative. But if you just came in and you cut up in your hand and you dripped your blood like onto the table to say, I'm willing to lay down my blood for you, or, yeah. or something like, you know,
I would see that as a threat.
Yeah, you would. Imagine a world where like there's superstitions about like, if you have my blood, you have control over me, like the way people do like with names and stuff. And you said, I offer you
that's
my
great
blood.
I love that idea. Just I don't want to glaze over that, the idea, oh, I have to protect my blood because yes, blood mages exist, and that means they can control me,
and me offering my blood to you freely means
is a sign of incredible trust
and respect. Yeah. And it might be that they do that, and then like the other person, it,
like, fucking shit, Kyle. That's awesome.
And then
that's such a good idea, bro.
I know.
Shit, man.
And the way you could play that out too, like, you know, how do you follow up with that? Like, you know, do they drip it back? And then you've both now shown the sign of respect, and you smear over the blood. So,
yeah.
So it's thinned enough so no one could use it.
Yeah.
To be like,
but also blend it.
Yeah. You smear it together.
You smear it together
to say we would now be jointly controlled.
Yeah.
Like, If someone has power over one of us, they have power over both of us. So
Kyle, Jesus, this is incredible.
I know. Welcome to the show.
this is great shit.
So, yeah, it's hard to apply the same Fremen stuff to things for the blood. I think the blood really just works in that greeting moment.
Yeah.
You know, blood is not particularly precious. Other than that, like, we don't need more of it. We have what we have. And like, you need more of it when you lose a lot of blood, but that's rare.
You know, hopefully.
Yeah. Versus the amount of water you need is absurd. So then what else do you need a lot of? Air.
Yeah.
And like, how do you apply this to air? You have a people who live high up in the mountains. It's, you know, the air's thin up here.
Or
playing with the exact same thing, just do it up in mountain ranges with, you know, they're taking oxygen from their blood. They're recycling some of that. They're doing rebreathers for everything. They are, I don't know.
We recently learned about the difficulties of terraforming Mars, and maybe it's something you're on a terraforming planet, and part of what you do is you to greet someone as a sign of respect, you take off your filter mask and you're like, I am going to greet you face to face.
You can see my full face.
So you can see my full face without and expose myself to the poisonous gases or something. Right. And that would be a great way to do that.
Quick aside, but great movie with Robert Redford and James Gandolfini called The Last Castle. He does this thing about salutes where he says it's Robert Redford delivering it. So it's just fucking brilliant. But he says, oh, you know, in medieval times, knights would greet each other on the field of battle. They would raise their visor on their helmet to say, I greet you, I am not afraid, you can see my full face, and I can see yours, to like look him in the eye, that kind of thing. And it feels very similar.
Well, let's do this. Let's put this, I was talking about cyberpunk earlier, police state, cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
You have a society where your identity is the most sacred thing about you, so everyone's walking around in camera blocking masks.
Yeah.
First thing you do is lift up your mask to say, this is who I actually am. I'm openly taking the risk that my identity could be compromised here.
I mean, do
in the future kind of infopunk world.
Yeah. I mean, do a like a very recent-y real example. You're in a pandemic and you take down your mask to say, I will threaten I will threaten my own health.
Yeah.
By revealing who I am, if you're willing to do the same, so we can like.
Right. This is our sign of respect.
This is our sign of respect, and we're not going to do it all the time. Great. Yeah. So, and that's kind of that idea.
The blood, the best part.
Yeah.
That feels like one of those ideas where we're not inventing it. We're going to, the more, it's going to like discover it, where one idea immediately leads to another, where it feels like we're discovering it.
We'll find out.
Spectacular.
And then I'll give my second idea, which is, I think, smaller, and then we can move on to yours. The other part of Dune that I really thought you could do more with and that is more transferable is the family atomics. As a phrase,
really incredible combination of words.
I think it really hits at this interesting point that you made earlier, like these houses replacing countries.
Yeah.
That like House Atreides has an atomic arsenal.
Yeah.
Imagine like the Rockefellers had an atomic arsenal.
You assume they didn't.
And they still exist, so they might. Like the Kennedys have an atomic arsenal, like that kind of thing. These like famous families having this type of power, and especially in like feudal. So like, okay. So then thinking about it more like not, oh, okay. Maybe not an atomic arsenal, because that's very specifically in the future and that does work, but then you're just straight up copying Dune. But thinking about it like, well, what if it's just every great family has this like secret kill switch protocol, like fail safe that is highly dangerous.
Some form of mutually assured destruction.
Yeah. Or just like the big red button.
I love a big red button.
And I was thinking about like, what can that be? It can be a super weapon of some kind.
The Targaryens had dragons.
Yeah. It could be like you have cryo frozen a bunch of super soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, you just have like 15 Master Chiefs sitting down in your basement. He's famously cryo frozen. Like, and you just be like, okay, well, we have a great threat. Send out all like my squad of super soldiers who will not be stopped. You could have it be that like a big red button in case of capture kills the family.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can kill the family remotely. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like you will not take me alive. You will not be able to use me in any specific way. I will be like people will, like I will be dead.
It release the Kraken.
Could be
you
a Kraken.
Have a Kraken.
Yeah.
Release the Kraken.
Yeah. Anything like that. And then...
I like it if each family's one is different, too. And they're always speculating. There's sort of this game of intuition happening where every house has sort of like the Mentats has an advisor. That whole job is to look at other houses or other families, rites, rituals, customs, heraldry, language usage to see... try and figure out what could their secret weapon be and try and prepare countermeasures for it. So if you have a house, for example, whose symbol is the giant squid, maybe you prepare for a giant kraken.
Yeah.
But you have someone whose whole job is just to read and analyze these things to figure that out.
I think that's an interesting point. Now, okay, so then works well in like in a TTRPG world where you have the various houses, like... Eberron in D&D, which is like, you know, like really based off of, you have these big, like these houses that are great houses, and each of them has this superpower that's different. It's like, here is your big red button, and members of this house have access to this big red button. And then you have different players who are from different houses, and they each get a different big red button. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they get their divine intervention. They get to use one time.
I was just thinking about clerics and paladins.
Like, you know, you get the one time you need the crazy get out of jail free card. Yeah. You can release your Kraken.
You get a scroll of wish.
Yeah, but you get a really specific thing. You get like swarm, and it won't always solve your specific problem. You can release a Kraken, but like you have a political problem, not a violence problem. Like, you know, you could kill a guy remotely. You know, and like prevent that capture, but that's not the problem. Like,
it would be cool to take different high level spells, create scrolls out of them, and have those be the different ones.
Maybe, yeah.
So like, one house has a scroll of power word kill. One house has a scroll of meteor swarm, and you've got to figure out.
I mean, you're thinking of a super D&D on that.
Oh yeah, but yes, deliberately.
You can use it in setting agnostic, as long as there are powerful families and powerful houses or powerful factions. Just like there's 15 guilds. And each guild has a huge role in society, and each guild also has their own big red button to retain their power.
I love the idea of a church having sort of like your idea of the super soldiers. Uh-huh. They release the paladins, and suddenly you've got
all the frozen master chiefs in the basement,
right? Who are just deliberately it's a church, but it is deliberately a church releasing these smitey boys who are going out.
That's a good rap duo.
Who are going out and wrecking things and protecting, right? That is, I love that.
Yeah. So let's move on to yours.
Super great. I mentioned a lot of things in my list of things that I love that are, that were all directly tied to the Bene Gesserit.
I mean, they're great.
They're spectacular. We have waxed poetic about them for so much, but one of the things that I was thinking them on this podcast as a whole. Yes. We talk about the Bene Gesserit quite frequently.
Okay. Obviously we just talk about witches. Yeah. You know, Cabal.
They come up as examples of things that we like.
Yeah, fair.
Because they're, I think, for my money, of the media that I have absorbed, they are probably the best version of a secret society that I've come across.
I think that's probably right.
I'm not saying there aren't better ones out there. I'm just saying of the stuff that I've absorbed, if you've got others that you think challenge it, let me know.
Yeah. If you have a secret society that we should look into, let us know. Dope. We can do that as a topic.
One of the things that I love most about them that we have not discussed yet is that they are an incredible example of Clark's third law, which is any sufficiently advanced science is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
So much of their shtick is bait, and their mystique is based in the fact that they just have absolute perfect control over their normal human body.
Yeah.
And absolute perfect understanding of human nature and human biology so that they can accomplish incredible feats. That's how they move fast enough to not be seen. They're still perfectly human.
Yeah. Right?
The voice is not a psychic power. It is about reading your target well enough to know what body language and tonal inflection will trigger an automatic response to the command prompt you've given them.
The one lady gets pregnant and then immediately...
Oh, you wanted a boy. You're getting a boy.
Yeah. And she's like within like a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I will have a boy.
Yeah. No, because they have perfect control over the... And yes, it is... There are breaches there, but they're of the science magic line. But it is an incredible example of that. And so I was thinking about this when I was on the metro the other day, and there are often dance groups that will come in and start dancing on the metro, and one of them was wrapping their arms around their heads and around their shoulders and way, you know, like board almost dislocating their shoulders to do these contortionist like moves. And I started thinking that would be a really cool way of starting to think through what are all of the look up extreme human feats that humans have done and create a group around them where they are normal and commonplace, right? Like imagine a society of warrior monks that's where their fighting style is based entirely on deliberate contortion and deliberate dislocation and relocation of limbs so that you could not predict where they're going. And it's completely insane, right? That was one thing that immediately came up. Kyle has his hand raised.
You know that guy who's like, maybe like Norwegian or something, who can polar plunge forever. Like his body, it doesn't feel cold.
Yeah.
Have you seen this guy?
I've heard of him. I haven't seen video.
That guy.
Yeah.
If that becomes normal, we have an entire society that cannot feel cold.
Right.
And they all just live in the Arctic naked.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah.
They're perfectly fine. They live in the most extreme cold conditions humanly possible because they then can be peaceful and remote. And yeah. People leave them alone and they're not bothered one bit.
Right.
Like,
look at the Guinness Book of World Records, just, right? Like there are people, there are people there that are, you know, think about if there are people there that do not feel pain. If you had a group of people that physically did not feel pain.
Yeah. Their pain receptors are just done. Yeah. You'd be like the best fighters.
You might also be, you maybe not long-term, but you could probably get a lot done in a shorter amount of time than somebody else. I mean, there is a huge... The human body is capable of some really incredible things.
More medical marvels.
Not for nothing, right? But I think that is one of my... It's small, and it's also one of the parts of the Bitmay Gezer that is not really talked about as much. But I think that idea of what could you do if you had perfect control of a human body?
Yeah, that is rhetorical.
Yes.
More than anything. Like, I don't think we need to necessarily figure out what that is, because it's just literally whatever the fuck you want to pick.
Yeah, but look,
and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. Look at Olympic athletes.
Yeah,
and the shit that they can do.
Well, and then it's like I think especially when it comes to like, you know, bringing in that super soldier type thing is like super assassins. They're just people who have perfect mastery of they can walk without making a single noise and they can jump super high.
Yeah,
and it's like they're just perfect ninjas basically.
Yeah,
it's like you just. You can do that. You can have
assassins that are contortionists that can hide in teeny tiny boxes.
Yeah. You could do, you could have a workforce that is like unstoppable. And so you don't actually need that many people.
Yeah.
Like where people can actually just, like, you move into like a, take the modern example where like fewer people have to do manual labor because we've automated and we've done whatever. So then now we're more efficient where people can move on to working in the arts and we can have more like, philosophical type of jobs. Like, what if you just made it where we don't need a bunch of laborers? We have people who like do not need to sleep.
Yeah.
And so they just work extra long periods of time and then they just get it done. You know, I don't know, like, you know, play around with how you make that work, but you can just have like a workforce that just achieves great physical feats and like can build great things like they have, you know, modern day equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep going. I don't know. Yeah.
No, it is a very small thing with very large potential impacts.
I like that you've picked this like niche part of the Bene Gesserit's toolkit that people would overlook.
Yeah.
People don't consider this point. They just think, oh, like magic, powerful, whatever. It's like
the voice.
Yeah. But they're like, no, it's the body control that is like the underlying discipline that makes them what they are, and that gives them this weird confidence as well, which adds to their like mystique.
Yeah.
Because imagine having body control like that. You would be really fucking confident.
Yeah.
There's a reason why like they portray them as all like absolutely beautiful women. They have total control of their body. They can be like, well, I'll make my hair do this or whatever. Like I think that's probably also part of this dynamic is like making these like purely confident human beings.
Yeah.
And like pure confidence is a magic power in the real world. And
especially if you knew you had a way to get people to do whatever you wanted them to do.
Yeah. And you don't even need to use the voice half the time. It's like that scene where the Bene Gesserit visits Fade Rotha and it just like purely plays him like a fucking fiddle.
Yeah.
With manipulation, a weird seduction that just like that, putty in her hands.
Yeah.
And it's just nothing for her. And you're like, oh yeah, because you guys are really good at this shit.
Yeah.
It's great.
And the second idea that I do want to, the other thing that I want to harp on is, again, picking a very, very small thing. I came up with it when I was talking earlier. The technology that uses body movement as a power source, we're going to get there in our society at some point. And it will be crazy to see what it's like.
It's kinetic energy and like batteries. It's
absolutely
like,
no, we're already working on it. We're already getting there.
I mean, elevators, you know, running off.
Yeah.
Humans are one day going to get there.
Yeah.
Watches, you know, like we got so much shit that just runs on kinetic energy. And
did this very successfully, treating the human body as a source of power.
Yeah.
I think is always fun. It ties into my love of blood magic.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the reasons I love the Bloodhunter in D&D. I think it's just, it's a great way of getting at magic without doing spell casting.
Yeah.
Which I think there needs to be more of in D&D. That's a different aside. But I think this idea of looking at the human body as a source, not only of power, but also of a resource like the Fremen do with water.
I'm thinking about like if you have a power gauntlet that like makes you do like, you know, like Vi and Arcane. Doomfist from Overwatch, he's also got a giant power gauntlet. But we have like a big like fist that you could basically punch like superhuman strength, and it's just charged up by you moving your arm.
Yeah.
So then like you can just sit there and you can just like twitch your fingers for like a couple hours.
Yeah.
And you'll have a huge punch.
Or you've got one of those like grip, grip winches.
And you just keep charging it.
Yeah.
But then it's just like basic, like it's actually pretty light to move around. Like somehow they're able to pull that off. But then it's just that movement generates the power that like then when you actually like use it in a punch, it will fucking fly.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. You know? It's just, there's a lot of really small stuff that is just sort of snuck in there. Mm-hmm. And
that's good world building
completely, and I like this because these are also kind of, to your point earlier, there are, I mean, everyone should go watch Matt Colville's three-part series on Dune when he talks about the ecologists, the prophets, and the prison planet. Those are, he breaks down Dune and analyzes it, these understated elements and unexplored elements really, really well.
Yeah.
And also I will say, let's give shout out to Villeneuve for actually adding in some really cool stuff where he did the UV scene for Gedi Prime in the,
Gedi Prime is incredible. And like, what a visually stunning world. Oh my
God.
It's insane.
Oh my. And his whole point about, if you grew up in a world without color, where literally everything was shades of black and white, how would that affect the way that you see the world? And think about, I thought
he made the Harkonnen so alien
in a brilliant way.
Yeah. Where you're like, they're human, but I don't feel connected to them at all.
But, and that gets sort of at my point about earlier with the Bene Gesserit, is look at, human beings are insane. Like the things that our bodies can do and how different we can all look and be. And it's like, you look at the Harkonnens and it feels more like an actual fleshed out society. I think we all sort of knew the Fremens a little bit by that point, but to see them and like, there's this it does fall into the Planet of Hats tropes. But you know what? I love a Planet of Hats.
Yeah.
Actually, for storytelling, I do.
Caladan, also a Planet of Hats. You know, like, it is like, oh, here's just an idyllic, it's just Scottish Highlands. Like, we have a whole planet that's Scottish Highlands.
Yeah.
Here we have literally
full
just
of water fat people.
Yeah. And then we go, here's the Middle East with Arrakis. And then here's, I don't even know what the fucking Harkonnens even represent, because they are so alien in these ways, at least the way Villeneuve does it, because of the visuals.
Yeah.
Like, visually, I do not know how to relate to this at all. I cannot imagine having black and white existence like that.
Yeah.
Like, that is fucking impressive. And
he understood what Herbert was trying to do in that world and found a very cool new way of doing it, of creating a black sun that's only UV light that would give you only right. It's like, it was new, it was cool.
Yeah.
This is less of a, I don't know how to do that in a world, but just something that occurred to me that I want to make sure we shout out, because
it's
unfucking believable.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a great job.
He did.
I look forward to his third movie representation.
I do too. Are they perfect? No, but I think they're
close too. It's a hard adaptation, and he did it well. It's
really difficult.
All right, so I think that's. Let's move on to what stuck for you. Probably my blood magic thing.
The blood magic thing is great. Yeah. It's. You hit on something there. I'm going to be playing around with that for. I'm going to be thinking about that for a little while. That's the main one. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's also what stuck for me. But I just love Dune generally, so I don't think anything here is... I enjoyed everything about this, and I think there's a lot of stuff that we left... We did not get into, but we could extract more from this.
Because, and we want to hear from you.
Because Dune is fucking good.
It's spectacular.
It is good as a story, but I think it's the world building in particular has so much meat that's worth eating. So
totally.
All right, well...
That's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye. It's like we use the voice.
Ah.